In His grace, God gave us a sequential end-time timeline that was hidden in the Psalms for thousands of years, waiting to be discovered. It has now been revealed here at the last minutes of the church age. This channel discusses end-time prophecy from the unique perspective of the encrypted timeline in the Psalms. If you want to know where we are on the timeline, please subscribe and take some time to watch the other videos on this channel. Also, please consider purchasing a copy of Encrypted, Unlocking the Timeline Revelation in the Psalms. Not only will it help you to better understand the time we're living in, but it will also be a very important book to leave behind. God bless you.
I wanted to start by saying something interesting happened to me this week. I was at the auto parts store that I go to a lot in town, and everybody there kind of knows me, and I know them a little bit anyway. And I was talking to them, and we were just talking about the state of the world. You know, everybody kind of has the same conversation right now, I think, because things are so crazy. And I had mentioned to the manager, like, hey, you know, Friday nights we're having this, we're having basically a conversation, a biblical-based conversation about all of this stuff going on in the world. It's a Bible prophecy, you know, a small group meeting. And he said, yeah, you know, I kind of believe like Yoda. And I'm not really interested in looking into prophecy. And of course, being a Star Wars fan all my life, until the Disneyfication happened,
yes.
the wokeification of even Star Wars, right?
Yes.
At that point, I had to just say no more for Star Wars. But I understood what he was talking about, because you guys remember it was like in the Clone Wars, I think. Devin will know, where Yoda's. Oh, hey.
And bring balance to the Force.
So the prophecy says.
A prophecy that Miss Reg could have been.
Yeah, so that's what he was talking about.
What did he say?
Because you
have a prophecy that
Miss Reg
could have been.
Maybe you haven't watched Star Wars.
I've never watched it.
He's good at translating.
I'll be here.
So basically what he was saying is you could read, like, the Bible is so, like, you know, gray.
Cryptic.
That, yeah, you could read, 10 different people could read it 10 different ways and think different things, right? And I got what he was saying, I understand that, but that's why we are studying on a deeper level. Everybody has that. Did everybody read that? Does it make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting that it's the number 4 again, right? I thought that was interesting. Because who's the number 4? The Dalet? The door?
The door?
Where have you been?
You think I remember everything you say? I'm just the only one.
Okay. When Jesus said that he is the door,
really?
Right?
You remember? Explain it.
He's the Dalet.
You don't need to. He gets it.
Okay.
I'm just quiet.
Well, explain it to her later.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Anyway. But when you see the number 4 in the Bible, many, many times the number 4 relates to Jesus. Okay? So, like, there's 4 Gospels, right, that tell about Jesus when he was here, right? There are 4 living creatures around the throne, right? When in Revelation, when you see him standing there like a lamb, there are 4 creatures around. There's always this number 4 in relation to Jesus. The lamb, for instance, on Shabbat HaGadol is selected 4 days prior to Passover. That's the day that he rode into Jerusalem on the back of a donkey. There was 4 days in between the time he was sort of accepted as the lamb and then slain as the lamb. So there's this 4 pattern over and over and over through the Bible about Jesus. So that's what I meant when I saw that there were, you know, in the Hebrew custom, there are 4 different levels of studying the Bible. I just thought, well, of course it's 4,
yeah.
Right? Anyway, so I showed you the clip about Yoda there. And so obviously a lot of people think, well, you know, there's a lot of different ways to look at prophecy, and people for hundreds of years have thought they were in the end times, right? And so I wanted to tell you about, and I spoke about this at the at church one time about the Millerite movement. Anybody remember that at all? Ruth Ann?
That sounds familiar.
So back in the 1800s, there was this movement. It was called the Millerite movement, and they believed, based on Daniel chapter 8, they did some calculation, and they took the 2300 days that's mentioned in Daniel chapter 8, and they changed that into years, and then they took one of the known dates where Artaxerxes, I think, had signed a, what am I trying to say? I don't know either. Sometimes words just like fly away from me. He signed a deal, okay, to rebuild the temple in Jerusalem, right? This is going back to Ezra's time. And so, a decree, that's the word I was looking for, sorry. He signed a decree, and I think that was in 457 or 458. And so basically what they did is they took the 2300 number and they added it as years to that date, and they came up to, hey, looks like Jesus is coming back in 1844. How awesome. And that's in a few years. So the Millerite people who believed this, okay, they basically got the... My computer is messing up big time. I'm sorry. I think it's dying on me. So they decided not to do what Jesus said, which was basically to occupy, and if you look at the word in Greek, it basically means to like bear fruit. Like if you're an investor, you want to actually, you know, get something back, right? So that's when we talk about bearing fruit for the kingdom. Instead of doing that, what they did is they kind of sold everything. They bought themselves their own white robes, because when you read in Revelation, right, we're going to have white robes. They're like, well, we're going to make it a little easier on old Jesus. We're going to buy our own robes. And so on October, what was the date? October something, 1844, they were literally sitting on their rooftops waiting for Jesus to come. Okay? That's not very smart, number one. That was called the Great Disappointment. I bet it was for all of them.
I think I know about this because I read about it in your book, actually.
Oh, yeah, I did mention it in the book, yeah. So anyway, it was quite a disappointment. And the reality is, though, just like Yoda said, like, they could misread this. So they took the number 2300 and they decided that they're going to add that to a date that they knew of, right? And then they based their whole doctrine around that. Not a real smart thing to do, because the reality is nothing else was in place, right?
Right.
Okay, there was no Israel. There was no mention of a temple. There was no red heifer. So here's what I want to show next if my computer... Here's a list. This is a list of everything. You know, this is just off the top of my head, honestly, because there's a lot more that I could put on there, but that's what I could fit in one page of prophecies that are... I don't like to call any prophecy fulfilled because it can be a pattern. However, all of these that are listed up there are in place today, right? So, like the red heifers, check, right? You can go down the list and... So Israel back in their land, yeah, 1948. Jerusalem, the capital again, yeah, 1967, sort of. And then 2017 again under Donald Trump. Jews returning to the land of Israel, yep, check. The world is focused on Israel right now, right? They're not even focused on Russia and Ukraine anymore. It's all of a sudden Israel.
We're paying attention to Russia a little bit today.
Yeah. Let's see, the world is turning against Israel. Check.
Mm-hmm.
The red heifer's been found. Desire in Israel to build the third temple. Check. Worldwide push towards globalization. Check. Global communication. Check. Because basically without that, how could you If you go to Revelation chapter 11, I believe, like the chapter about the two witnesses, the whole world's going to see them get killed, right? And then the whole world's going to see them resurrect also. Mm-hmm. Well, how could that happen in 1844?
Yeah, what were they reading?
that's the thing. So
they really throw a lot out.
Yeah.
They were reading.
What, you mean, just off the top of my head, I came up with this much that wasn't in place in 1844. So, you know, my friend at the parts store, he's kind of right? You know, because you can take one prophecy and make a big mess out of that. And they did, right? But when you take all of this together,
right,
that's different. I mean, it's just different.
Right.
You can't look at this list and go, nah, it's still a long way off. Because eventually you get to the point where, think about it this way, the technology that we have today pretty much matches what the Bible describes. If we go another 20 years, let's say, we're going to be beyond what the Bible describes.
Mm-hmm.
It's not, yeah, anyway.
Right, right.
And then the other things, like a lot of what Paul talked about, apostasy, destruction of the family, genetic engineering. Yeah, there's just so much. If anybody wants a copy of this later, I'll gladly give you a copy. Can you see it okay on your phone?
But even that ability to be able to buy and sell, like, you know, with control, like one person, like an Antichrist, you know, only computers, they wouldn't even know what that meant.
No.
Not even in 1980. I mean, we do, because computers, like, where it could go, like, barely starting.
I mean, let's say in 1844, right, when the Millerite movement was a thing.
They weren't flying yet. I mean,
no, they literally would have had to have thought, okay, there will be a soldier stationed outside every general store, and he's going to check your mark.
Yeah, I don't even know what...
None of that even makes sense.
Yeah.
And then what's he going to do, send a carrier pigeon to headquarters, right? And like, okay, we got us one here. He doesn't have the mark, so you can't buy.
Even like in 1980 when they talked about it, we were still like, well, there's half of these, especially that one wasn't checked yet.
Right.
How are they going to do that? Everybody asked that because people were still talking, oh, it's going to happen. Not yet,
yeah.
It's not because that, half the stuff isn't on
yeah.
the list.
Well, it's definitely all in place today.
Yep, come a long ways.
So I think even Yoda would have to agree that... We're not dealing with one possibly misread prophecy, but a whole Bible full of prophecies are now in season. Like, they're ball blossoming right now. It's ready. Everything is definitely in place. So that's just part of it, and I showed you the checklist. So this is what the meat of what I wanted to talk about tonight, because over the last week, digging in deep again, something else kind of, I don't know, it's just weird to say, but the Lord keeps showing me these things that I've never heard before. And so it makes me have to wonder, like, Lord, am I crazy? Am I just like, am I like Yoda and just like, you know? I don't know. It's pretty crazy, though. But so a couple of years ago when I was teaching a prophecy class at church, I think it was Kristen, Jim's wife, asked me one night about the difference between Luke 17, where Jesus says that, where he was talking about basically a carcass and vultures. You guys know the scripture I'm talking about. And then the similar verse in Matthew 24, where Jesus mentioned something almost identical. There's some subtle differences, but, and I always, you know, I've studied that a lot over the years, trying to figure that one out, because it's perplexing. If you look at it one way, you could definitely think that the rapture doesn't happen until the end of the tribulation. If you follow the Matthew 24 thought process, the way that Jesus laid it out, then it seems like the rapture is at the end, but that's only if you try to make Luke 17 and Matthew 24 the exact same, okay? And what I realized a long time ago, this isn't the epiphany, but is that they're not the same, because in Matthew 24, Jesus was speaking to the disciples from the Mount of Olives, first of all, okay? And in Luke 17, he wasn't. So it was a different time and place. Luke 21 is the same as Matthew 24, because it's the same event where he was speaking from the Mount of Olives. However, Luke's account is an account for and from the Gentiles. Okay, Luke was a Gentile. And why do you think we have four Gospels, right? Mm-hmm. Matthew was a Jew. His writing was, I'm not going to say it was only for Jews, but basically it all had a Jewish slant to it, right? Luke was a Gentile. So when Luke in Luke 21 was talking about the invasion that was going to happen, I believe he was talking about the what happened in 70 AD when Rome sacked Jerusalem, right? But what people do is they try to make Luke 21 and Matthew 24 kind of go hand in hand, like it's all the same, and it just was written wrong, or the writers got the sequence wrong. But then you've got this other part that's Luke 17 that seems to be part of Matthew 24. So it gets really, really confusing. And it was always confusing for me. Because I wanted to separate the two, because I believed that Luke 17 was talking about the rapture, okay? Because it followed right after Jesus said paralambano, right? He's talking about two will be working in the field, one will be taken and one left. Well, that word is paralambano, which means taken as in marriage, okay? So then they said, where, Lord? This is the disciples. They're like, where? Where are they going to be taken? And then Jesus said, and I'm going to read this, because if I don't, I'll mess this all up. He said, so this is his answer to where, Lord? Wherever the body is, there the eagles will gather together. That's as cryptic as it gets, right? I'm surprised the next sentence in that isn't like, can you explain that, please? Because that makes no sense to us. So, but now in the Matthew 24 account, it seems like he's talking about the end of the tribulation period, where he says something almost identical. So in Matthew 24, he says, for as the lightning comes from the east and flashes to the west, so also will be the coming of the Son of Man be. For wherever the carcass is, there the eagles will be gathered together. Now, some translations use eagles, some use vultures. The reality is that if you look it up in Greek, it's a bird of prey. It's not necessarily one or the other. So it's kind of a generic word. And I always kind of focused on, like in Luke, it said body, and in Matthew 24 said carcass. And when you look up the Greek words, they were a little different. And so I kind of thought, well, so one is probably like the body of Christ, and the other are all the dead people that are mentioned in Revelation 19. Okay. But, so remember the Neganoth timeline. Okay. That one stumped me for a bit, and then it all made sense. Let's see if I have, I think, yeah, this is it. Okay, so you see that on the Neganoth timeline, Psalm 76, this is going to get really deep, by the way. So everybody put your thinking caps on tonight.
It's about time you get deep.
This is going to be deep. If you're not confused now, you will be momentarily, okay? So Psalm 76 shows up on the Neganoth timeline as the end of the tribulation, okay? If you read Psalm 76, it's talking about war, and I don't really want to read the whole thing. But it's talking about war, it's talking about plundered, it's talking about standing in his presence, right? Just kind of like what Luke 21 says. And then it has this really, like after the war part, it says to deliver all the oppressed of the earth. When I was writing the book, I was really struggling with trying to figure out who the oppressed of the earth were, because on one hand, when I was searching the Bible on this fourth level, trying to connect all the dots, it seemed like it could be Christians. But then on the other hand, I kept coming up with, I think it's the Jews, like in the remnant, basically, in the refuge.
Yeah, the third.
And so I couldn't say one way or the other. I don't remember. I haven't been back through my book now to see if I did try to, like, nail it down to something. I just remember being really confused with it. But now this clears it up completely. So what we have is, and this is why it was really perplexing when I found the Neganoth timeline. You'll notice that Psalm 76 is on there twice. Psalm 76 matches this year, 2024/2025, okay? And then it appears again as 2031 and 2032. So that made no sense, I thought. First, I thought, honestly, that may be a deal breaker, that maybe the Neganoth timeline isn't legit. I saw that the Psalm 55 was right in the middle, and it really matched, and there were seven of them. And so I thought, maybe there's an error in my thinking.
So who are the oppressed of the earth?
It's both. It's both. That's the beauty of it. That's why it's in there twice. Okay. So this all interconnects, and I hope I can do this without reading, because this gets really deep, okay? So remember we were talking about Abraham, okay, between the ages of 75. Is everybody kind of following so far? Okay. So we were talking about Abraham between Genesis 12 and like Genesis, I forget, above 15, somewhere in there. It lists Abraham's name, or not name, duh. I'm thinking Abram versus Abraham. It lists his age, okay? So we know that at 75 years old, he was supposed to leave where he was, leave Haran, and go to the Promised Land, to Canaan, right? So we have an age marker, 75. What year is... Oh, and we know that he was born in 1948, okay? Israel, coincidentally, was reborn in 1948 A.D., Israel now is 75 years old. We have this time marker again where Abraham, magically, the Bible decides to tell us his age and what's going on when he was 75 years old. And then you have this series of tribulations that happen in his life all the way up until he's prior to 85 years old. That's the next time we kind of see his age. Okay, so all this stuff happens to him. One thing that happens to him is in Genesis 14, and that is Lot gets, so there's a war, okay? And this is actually the first war that's mentioned in the Bible. Lot is kidnapped. Abraham, who is not a warrior and who doesn't have an army, okay, he takes 318 of his own men, like it says that they were born in his own home, so they're like servants, basically. And he goes and he defeats four armies and gets Lot back, okay? And Lot's family and possessions. So he goes and he whoops up on them. He takes 318 men and goes and whoops up on four armies. That's crazy right there, okay? And these are like seasoned warriors that he was fighting, because they had just whooped up on Sodom and Gomorrah and all these other cities as they were marching south. So after the defeat, Abram at the time, he goes to the Valley of Kings and he meets Melchizedek. Does everybody know who that is?
Jesus.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So this is where it gets really crazy, and where the interconnection is between Genesis 14, Psalm 76, Luke 17, Matthew 24. Okay? And again, this is going to get deep, and I may get lost in here, and if I am, you guys fish me out, okay? Try to, like, ask questions, because I'm going to assume that everybody understands my rambling, and maybe you don't.
Okay, so keep going. He goes and meets Melchizedek.
Yeah, so what happens is Melchizedek, okay, he doesn't go into Salem or Jerusalem, right? He meets him in this valley. So he meets him in between where Abram lives and where he defeated and all this kind of stuff. So they're neither one of them are at their home, okay? That's the first point. Melchizedek brings bread and wine, leaves his abode, his city, Jerusalem, okay, and goes out into the valley and meets Abraham to basically commune with him, sup with him and his 318 servants. Okay. Now, here's the crazy part. This is where all the interconnections happen. The word Salem is only used in the Bible twice. In the Old Testament. I shouldn't say Bible, in the Old Testament. It is used again in Hebrews chapter 7, which is kind of one of the ways that I was able to put all this together. Okay. So you think, wow, that's kind of interesting. So Genesis 14 uses the word Salem, and we don't see that again until Psalm 76, right? That's really, really crazy. So there's this word interconnection there. Also, Salem is derived from Shalom, which means peace, okay? Guess how many times the Bible has the word peace? Shalom, like translated into peace in it. 318 times. One for every one of those servants. That's kind of crazy. Like, of all the numbers that it could have been, right? It happens to be 318. So God's telling us something through all of this again. So, Psalm 76 lands on our timeline as... Okay, here's where I'm going to get all tongue-tied. Psalm 76 lands as 2024-2025. It happens to use the word Salem instead of Jerusalem, okay? Just like Genesis 14, okay, we know that Melchizedek, if he wasn't Jesus, like a Christophany, right? Then it was, he was like a pre-Advent sighting of Jesus is a Christophany. So it's Christ before he was born in Bethlehem. Okay? Like when the angels met Gideon, for instance, there was one primary. When they met Abraham under the terebinth tree, there was one primary angel, the angel of the Lord, right? That's, I'm pretty sure that's Jesus, right? That's a Christophany. So there's this, we'll just call Melchizedek a Messiah figure, okay? Just like Hebrews points out, he doesn't have a history, he doesn't have a past, there's really nothing about him.
Yeah,
exactly. So, okay.
And they treated him like a priest.
Well, yeah, and the Bible says, so in Genesis 14, it says that he was the high priest and he was the king of Salem, okay? Now, the law hadn't been given yet, but under God's law, through Moses, no one can be, remember the Uzziah deal where he went in, he was the king, and he went into the temple and he wanted to act like a priest, and that's a big no-no? That's a no-no. Only Jesus can be both king and priest, okay? So here we have Melchizedek, both as king and priest, coming out of his abode to meet Abraham in the 318, right? To sup with them, bring bread and wine. Does anybody think bread and wine is, does that connect to anything? Like the Last Supper, what is Jesus, right? He's the communion, which was representative of him, his body. Remember the Hannah thing where God interconnects all of this, like Peniel, which means face of God. That was her father's name.
Oh, yeah.
And she actually, when she's 84, she sees the face of God in the temple. Mm-hmm. You see how God interconnects, and we're at that fourth level.
Then she's out of there.
Yeah, right. She's never, yeah. So here we have another one of those sort of deeply interconnected things where the more you study it, the more you realize it's like, wow, there are so many things that connect here. And I haven't even gotten to the best part of this yet. So, okay. But I want you to think of this. Where does the Bible tell us that we're going to meet Jesus at the rapture?
In the sky.
Exactly. Between where we live and where he lives, right? If you go back to Isaac and Rebecca, okay, she lifted up her eyes. If anybody's gotten this far in the book, that was all a pattern of the rapture, okay? She lifted up her eyes. He came out of his abode. He was living in tents at the time. He met her in a field. She was on a camel, okay? And she lifted up her eyes. That's a key phrase right there. And then they met between where she lived, right? Because she was from Haran. I'm not sure if I ever say that right. And then, what's that?
Heron.
Sounds like a bird.
Haran sounds too much like Heron.
Oh yeah, that's true. So anyway, the point is that why does the Bible tell us that we meet Jesus in the air? It's because it's between where we are and where he is. We meet in between. So just as Isaac and Rebecca met in between where she was from and where he was from, in the field, right? He just happened, when you read the story, he just happened to be walking out in the field that day, and behold, there she is, right? Instead of she rolled up to his pad, and you know, there's a reason why it tells us these things. And when you're at the first level of studying the Bible, you're just reading the Bible, you don't pick up on any of this, right? So anyway, this, if I'm going to leave, I'm going to print this out or whatever, put it somewhere where everybody can read it, because I do a much better job of writing than I do talking about this. I mean, I have this really detailed in here. But my belief after really digging deep into this is that it is a picture, like when, okay, we know Melchizedek is basically, at a minimum, a symbol of Jesus, right? He comes out of his temple in Salem, Jerusalem, and he meets Abram in the Field of Kings, and he sups with him. He brings him bread and wine, and then what happens? So then he blesses Abraham, and then Hebrews chapter 7 tells us that the greater blesses the lesser. Well, Abraham is like the king of the nations, right? I mean, he's the father of the nations, so you don't get much higher than that unless you're Jesus. So another reason why I think that this is actually Jesus, by a different name, right? Sort of incognito. He probably had some spy glasses on and stuff, right? Anyway, so Melchizedek blesses Abram, and then Abram gives him a tenth of the plunder of the spoils of war, basically. And remember what a tenth represents? It represents the whole, right? And then there just happens to be this Satan character lurking about. He's the king of Sodom, of all places, and he wants all the souls. That's interesting. If you ever pick up on that, they're kind of talking about exchanging the plunder. Well, part of the plunder are people. And so this, I'm just going to call him the Satan incognito, okay? He doesn't want any of the booty, like the jewels and the gold and whatever. He wants the people. He wants the souls. Just a lot of interesting things going on there. So then, okay. So I'm trying to figure out how to explain this, because it does get really, really deep. So, okay, that is a picture of the rapture. Okay, and that aligns with Luke 17, which is also definitely a picture of the rapture. Okay, because it was talking about the paralambano. It's where one is taken and one is left. And when you go to Matthew 24, that's not the context at all. I can't approach it from that direction. Okay, just trust. Just trust me that the Melchizedek connection here, it is at least symbolic of the rapture and then also the second coming. Because if you think about it, it's the same deal. So you've got, maybe I can do this, because this is really, really difficult for me to spit out. Okay, here it is. All right, I got this. The simplified history or plot of Genesis 14 matches the Lord's defeat of the Gog-Magog invaders and the subsequent rapture of the church in 2024, according to the timeline, okay? Which is why Psalm 76 is pinned on the timeline around 2425. Similar to Psalm 124, Psalm 76 also indicates that the rapture, or our being set free, like Lot was and his family, and our then face-to-face meeting with the true King of Peace, Salem, and also who is the high priest, Jesus, will take place after the battle is won. Okay? So, according to the timeline, the Gog-Magog invasion, that battle happens, then the rapture. Okay? That is actually against what I ever believed. It was only finding the timeline in the Psalms that I had to change my opinion on that, because I always thought that the rapture had to happen beforehand, not after Gog-Magog. Okay, so, likewise, the plot of Genesis 14 also matches the Lord's future victory over the Antichrist and his armies at Armageddon in 2031-32, according to the timeline. Which there he will set the remnant captives free, who've been sheltered in the refuge for 3.5 years, and their face-to-face meeting with the Lord after they cry out, "Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord." So can you see how the sequence is identical for both? The rapture, if you've got the Gog-Magog invasion, then the rapture, right? And then you've got Armageddon, then they're set free by Jesus. They will see him face to face here on earth, right? But we will see him face to face in the air. Okay, that's where the whole coming out thing is. Now, likewise, when he sees them and sets them free from the refuge, they won't be in their home and they won't be in his home yet, right? Because they're going to be in this refuge. So if you look at the plot of both scenarios, they're very, very similar, but they're two very separate and distinct events, right? That's why it shows up twice on the timeline when you put it all together. Okay, now here's where it gets interesting. I'm gonna come back to the vultures, okay, and the where the vultures gather, you know, where the carcass is, okay. This is probably the hardest one I've done because it's so sort of intertwisted together. It's kind of hard to talk about it, which is why I spent a good bit of time writing about it so that I could get all the detail in here. Okay, so I'm gonna apologize. I'm gonna read this part, okay? Because otherwise I'll probably mess it up. All right. So, Luke 17 is tied to Psalm 76 on the Psalm of Asaph timeline, which represents the Gog-Magog War of Ezekiel 38 and 39, and the subsequent rapture of the church. Luke 17 describes the rapture using the Greek word paralambano, we already talked about that, or taking of a bride. Then the disciples asked the Lord, after he said that to them, where would they be taken? I believe Jesus not only answered where, but also when. Just as I described in my book, it appears from both Psalm 124 and Psalm 76 that the rapture occurs after the defeat of Gog of Magog, notice that Ezekiel describes what happens after Gog and his armies are defeated in Ezekiel 39. This is the kicker, okay? Everybody used to take Luke 17, the vulture and carcass scripture, and Matthew 24, and everybody knew about Revelation 19, because there's a verse there about, you know, God bringing the vultures and the birds to clean up the killing fields, basically, right? So everybody would always say, see, those two match Revelation 19. They have to. But then that means that one of them isn't a rapture, because this is at the end of the tribulation.
Yeah.
That's where it got confused, right? However, I can't believe I never noticed this before. I've struggled with these verses for years. It's not just in Revelation 19, it's also in Ezekiel 39. Here's Ezekiel 39. Son of man, this is God speaking, this is what the sovereign Lord says, call out to every kind of bird and all the wild animals, assemble and come together from all around to the sacrifice I am preparing for you, the great sacrifice on the mountains of Israel. That's almost identical to what it says in Revelation. This event happens twice. It's not just at the end of the tribulation, according to the timeline, it's also at the end of Gog Magog and the rapture. Okay, so now think about this. Well, I'm just going to read it. Can you see how this makes sense now with the understanding of the encrypted timeline? After the defeat of Gog and his allied invaders, God prepares a feast of the dead soldiers for the birds and the wild animals. At this point, I believe that the rapture takes place while the birds are feasting, because that's what he's saying. So it tells us where, okay, and when. Remember that we talked one night about how Philip was raptured horizontally, not just vertically? Remember, he's like trotting along with the eunuch in the wagon, and then he baptizes him in the Jordan, and then poof, he's gone, and he appears somewhere else, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay? Think about this, too. When at the Tower of Babel, God scattered everyone all over the world. Well, how did he do that? Did he, like, give them Nikes and tell them, go run off that way? No, I think they, like, boop, like, wow, okay, where am I, right? I think they were raptured, in a sense, to somewhere else. Okay, God can do anything he wants to. Like, some of this may sound kooky, but we're talking about God, right? Is this impossible for him? So, what I believe is going to happen at the rapture. Okay, think about it this way. I guess I've always thought of the rapture as we're going to go straight up, right? Meet him in the air. Well, over the Central Valley? Think about it.
Too smoggy.
Yeah, he doesn't want to come back here. Right? I mean, and this may sound silly, but the fact that they asked Jesus, where, Lord? You know, and then he gives them this description that when, you know, where the carcass is, the vultures will gather. And you see that exact thing in Ezekiel 39, right? And then it just so happens that Ezekiel 38 and 39 plus Psalm 76 fall on the timeline of the year for the rapture, which quite frankly is this year, right? Maybe into 2025, but not past that. Then all of that reappears again at the end of the tribulation. Is everybody following me? I know this is kind of twisted, okay? So they ask specifically, where, Lord? So then his answer is, if Paralambano, in this case, okay, we're talking about Luke 17, means rapture, because he's taking us as a bride, right? And they ask then, where are you taking us, right? And he says, where the vultures are. Well, where are the vultures going to be? Ezekiel 39 tells us, in Israel. So what do you think? Is he going to meet us over the Central Valley of California, or are we going to meet him over Israel?
Nobody knows.
Well, Ezekiel, I mean, when you put these two together,
what he's saying is he thinks we'll be transported.
Yeah.
First.
Yeah, I believe that he did answer the question, because it was, you know, they probably were wondering, like, what is he talking about? Because that made no sense whatsoever, right?
Because we'd really be limiting God if we thought we needed to go to Israel to be able to be a part of that.
Right, right. No, we don't need to put on our Nikes and go to Israel, yeah. Right? But we could simply disappear from right now and be over Israel meeting him. And all of the Psalms, all the Bible, it's all about Israel. Right? We've been grafted in as Gentiles, but this is all about Israel. Rosenfeld. That's got to be Jewish, right?
Jewish, yeah.
Yeah.
Go to New York, it's everywhere in New York, yeah.
Really? There's a lot
in New York? It's like his whole family history is from Russia.
Oh, okay, yeah.
When I married my dad, who's Punjabi, goes, "You married a Jew?"
I said our company, Rosenfeld Construction, started the same year Israel became a nation.
Wow.
The science.
Yeah.
1948.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
Yeah. Well, there's a connection.
He's going first.
He's got VIP seats.
So I believe that. For instance, Psalm 76 matches Luke 17 and then matches Ezekiel 38 and 39. Those scriptures go together. So what that indicates is that Luke 17 isn't Revelation 19. Okay, it's not where the vultures are gathered at the end of the tribulation. It's the rapture of the church. Just like it appears in Luke 17, because again, he uses the word paralambano, okay? But I also believe that Psalm 76, which appears at the end of the tribulation, matches Matthew 24, which is talking about the end of the tribulation, which matches Revelation 19, okay? Does all that make sense?
Yes.
So, because of the Neganoth timeline, and two things that didn't make sense, the fact that the same psalm was on there twice, it actually opened up something brand new that I'd never seen before. And the fact that, I don't know, when I started thinking about it, like instead of like being raptured vertically, just into outer space somewhere, and he was going to be there, it kind of makes more sense to me now. Well, of course we would meet him over Israel. Does that make sense?
God can do anything, like you said.
Yeah. I mean, if they asked him where, so either A, none of these connections are true, okay, or B, Jesus lied when they said where, and he just said, well, some vultures and whatever, and, you know, I don't really want to tell you, so I'm just going to throw this out there, right?
Because he made a habit of wasting words.
Yeah, exactly. No, I mean, I think we all realize that, number one, there are no coincidences in the Bible. These things are interconnected. Mm-hmm. And number two, every word is very purposeful, especially if there are numbers involved, like the 318. Who could have ever imagined that? We're talking literally about Salem, right? Which means shalom, which is peace. And that shalom is in the Bible 318 times. And in that same text, there's 318 servants. Why didn't it just say there he had a bunch of servants, right?
Specific
318. That's really interesting. Not, he didn't even round up or down, right? It's not, well, roughly 300. I mean, 318. There's a reason for it. And that's why on the fourth level, on the sod level of studying the Bible, when you see these things, you have to know there's a meaning to it. There's so many things that I've seen even since writing the book that I haven't had time to dive into, but it's like, you know, when I'm reading, it's like, oh come on, right? You know, I see it, but I don't have time to go find all of the other interconnections to it, you know, but there's something all the time that's so specific that it has to be an interconnection. Anyway, so that's pretty much what I
have. Any questions? Was that super crazy? Were we too deep tonight with all that?
Your stuff is always crazy. It's not
yeah. What I thought, wow, okay, Genesis 14 was always a mystery. You can see how they lay everything out, right? And Genesis 14 is right before Genesis 15, right? Which is where he has to split those animals, and we did the timeline for that, right? It's just like all of that's happened right in the same time frame.
I want to go through and read all of these now, because I did read Ezekiel 39 the other night, and about the bird thing,
mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So basically, these are God's enemies, and he wants the birds to have a feast on their carcasses,
so
right?
Like really
and that event happens twice. It happens Ezekiel 38-39, and then Armageddon also. And so when I was really perplexed about Psalm 76 and why it appears twice in our timeline, and then once I pieced it all together, now instead of it being like, well, I don't know, maybe this shines a light that this isn't real, actually now it gives it more validity. Now it makes absolute sense when you factor in Matthew 24, Luke 17. It absolutely makes sense. It makes me really excited that we are living in the year that according to, you know, God could do anything. He could take this time and move it, right? But I'm going to say something. I don't think so. I believe wholeheartedly that really, okay, so we had 2017, Donald Trump declared Jerusalem as the capital. 2018, it actually happened. They moved the embassy and all that, and other nations followed, right? The solar eclipse, okay? 7 years of Salem. So that's seven Salems, and now we've had, well, come August 21st, we will have 7 years of Salem, right? Which means peace. Peace and prosperity. Like the 7 years that Joseph had where they, you know, the 7 years of plenty, right? Wasn't an overabundance. Because I wouldn't say right now we have an overabundance, right? Things are changing. But we're not starving either, right? Then comes the 7 years of not so great, right? The 7 years of famine. And so I would look at this and say, okay, so we had the Revelation 12 sign in 2017. We had the solar eclipse of the seven Salems in 2017. There's two witnesses right there that was the start of the first 7 years. And then this year is the end of that first 7 years. Then there's going to be a period of time in between the rapture and the actual signing of the covenant by the Antichrist. I think that's going to be upwards to a year, probably, is just my guess. And then 2025, according to the timeline, is the start of the tribulation. And what I'm saying is it's already started, right? So if God's going to pause it now, he's going to have to replicate all of that again because it's already started. Does that make sense? Also, when you add in the fact that I heard today, I was listening to some financial news, 132, I think it was, out of the 190 whatever nations in the world, they're all developing digital CBDCs, digital currencies right now. And those countries represent 98% of the global GDP. So like the countries that aren't doing it are like, don't really matter anyway. So basically almost 100% of the world's wealth, trust me, they're not going to develop CBDCs and then not use them, right? I also look at it this way. Everything going on in our country, okay, if you wanted to build our country, if you wanted our country to be a strong sovereign nation, you would do the exact opposite of what's going on right now.
Yeah.
Okay, everybody realizes that, right? But yet, we keep going down this road of doing everything opposite of what we should. You have to know that these people know. They know. The reason why, this is just me talking, this isn't necessarily from the timeline, okay?
the reason why these people hate Trump so bad is because they know when the end game is, okay? These globalists, they know their target. They thought they had more years to prepare, and Trump screwed all that up. Now they're working overtime to destroy everything. You know, remember Biden's whole Build Back Better, which wasn't Biden's, it was the World Economic Forum. They all the globalists were using the same slogan, right?
Yeah, right.
For their elections. Oddly enough, half of the world this year have elections. I mean, everything's about to change.
Yeah.
Everything's about to change.
This isn't like prophecy in the Bible of God, and it's all prophecy. He never really, he said this is going to happen, and it was never, very seldom did he ever cut anybody a break. Like the one guy where they let him live 15 years longer and take
yeah.
him out.
Right.
There's not a whole lot, and anybody, they repented. He didn't say we're repenting. He says this is what these people will do.
Yeah.
He says you're going to be like this, 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 and this, and this, and this, how they're going to be. He didn't say, or they might repent. We'll see what's going to
okay.
happen.
Okay, Nineveh would be a good example of a nation that did repent, okay?
Yeah.
However, God knew they would repent, right?
Right, see, and he knows
God knows
so we're not
going to
do that.
America isn't going to repent.
Right, he's late. So once prophecy, the people go, oh, prophecy takes thousands of years. Not never, and when it starts, it can't be stopped. When
yeah, no.
Once it goes into effect, it's a ticking time clock.
God has
no stopping it.
God has a time yeah. clock.
Yeah.
It's in the stars,
yeah.
right?
Yeah,
the things that we're seeing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the reality. So he knows America. Now, we would all turn around and repent, right?
Right.
And a lot of Americans would. But our government isn't. I mean, look at what's going on between America. They're trying to destroy. Oh, man. We're doing everything wrong. Oh, my gosh. When it comes to Israel right now.
They're not dumb. They know what they're doing is purposely they're doing it.
Yeah.
It's not
yeah.
strange.
Yeah, because you can't look at it and go, why are they doing this? You're like, wow.
No, Satan is running the show for those guys. That is their
yeah.
God. That is their father.
Yeah.
There's no way they could be accidental.
Yeah.
No, it's absolutely not. No, so the clock is ticking. It's ticking really, really fast right now. It's getting louder and louder. They know the end game, and trust me, Satan knows this.
Yes.
Okay.
He knows that timeline.
Yeah, he knows. And so there are people on this planet who also know this. They're not doing podcasts about it because they're working for the enemy. Okay.
Yeah, Satan's their father.
Yeah, they know that time is very short. We know that demons know about the timing because we talked about that one night, right? The demon that basically told Jesus, why are you here now? It's not time, right? They know the timing, right? We're figuring this out, and what me, for instance, I've studied Bible prophecy for maybe 25 or so years, I don't know, something like that. Satan's had thousands of years to figure this out. You think he doesn't know that his time is short? You think that he doesn't know that in 32 AD when Jesus died, that it would be 2,000 years later when all this is going to end, right? That he had 2 days left, 2 biblical days being 2,000 years, and that God is prompt. You know, God's not a God of chaos. You know, if it's 2,000 years, it's 2,000 years.
Yeah.
And, we're here.
That prophecy Daniels we were talking to the great church thing. He was doing the timeline like this, and it was to the day.
In Daniel?
He was going, the way they looked at it, and he said, you know, scholars had studied this, he goes, it's not just like that area of what it can be.
Yeah.
He goes, this is to the day.
Yeah, April 6th,
yeah,
32 AD.
To the day. And
yeah.
So it's like, so it is there, and it's very apparent that it's there. And so it's not like, well, it could be at least a couple thousand years of things.
Right.
You know, no, it's...
God doesn't keep things loosey-goosey.
No.
It's... No,
every
he's absolutely...
Every time you said anything was going to happen, any prophecy, know that this is going to happen to you, boo, your family, da-da-da-da, sure enough, boom, happened. And
yeah.
And when he said it was going to happen, done. Was no, he's not going to go back on his word. It's already been done.
Yeah. It's funny, I was listening to a rabbi. I had listened to this broadcast months ago. It was from about a year ago. So it was before October 7th and all that. But I went back and re-listened to it. And he was talking about how Abraham was born in 1948. And at 52 years old, according to their sages, they understand that that's the first time that Abraham basically, I'll just call it proselytized for God. Like, he declared that he's not going to follow after false gods and those idols and stuff, that he's going to follow after the one God, Yahweh. And so that equates to exactly the year 2000 BC, right? And he said that. And then he said, he was talking about the 2000s. Remember, I showed you the timeline, the Jewish version of the timeline. And we've now been in the Messianic 2000-year Messiah age for, well, almost 2,000 years, right? And but here's where it gets interesting. He's saying, like, it's exactly 2,000 years, and Abraham, exactly 2,000 years. But then he changes it for the Messiah because he knows when Jesus came, right? He said, but this one is like 2,400 years. Because that's when Maimonides or whoever basically wrote that, you know, they tried to change everything, right, basically. Right. After Jesus, a couple hundred years after Jesus, they're like, no, nah, man, if we stick with this, you know, I don't want to call it numerology, but if we stick with what we've been teaching, sure looks like Jesus is the Messiah, right? So we got to change this. So now it went from 2,000 to like 2,400. And so now, you know, the Messiah could come at any time and blah, blah, blah. And I just thought, that's pretty interesting. You're doing some kind of gymnastics there to make that work out for you so that Jesus isn't your Messiah, right? Well, they are the descendants of the Pharisees, and yep. Jesus fought with them repeatedly, right? Yep.